The U.S. began its war on terrorism following the attacks of September 11, 2001. The focus began in al-Qaeda, but has since expanded to include the Islamic State. Considering the non-traditional challenges of fighting terrorist groups instead of more traditional nation-centered adversaries, some have questioned whether the war on terror is being fought correctly and whether it'll ever end. One person who's looked into that topic extensively and wrote about it recently is Catherine Zimmerman, research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and the research manager for AEI's Critical Threats Project, and she is with me. Catherine, how consistent has the U.S. policy on fighting terror been, and has it changed from administration to administration?
In general, the United States has been pursuing the same counterterrorism strategy from administration to administration. Each one has packaged it a little bit differently, and of course, there have been some changes and actually expansion of the policy as we've moved forward. But by and large, from the Bush administration forward, the way that we've been fighting terrorist groups, particularly those linked to al-Qaeda and now the Islamic State, has been with a military strategy oriented on destroying that group and the people that support the group itself, as well as trying to counter the ideology. Now, there have been changes. The Obama administration put a lot of emphasis on countering the ideology. We see that with the Countering Violent Extremism, CVE programs that the Obama administration started to run. And now the Trump administration has moved away from that CVE, countering violent extremism paradigm, into much more of a military approach, and also asking our partners to step up and fight the fight. But that partnership, the local counterterrorism partnerships, have been core for both the Bush administration and the Obama administrations as well. Where the administrations want to talk about change, there has actually been a lot of continuity. The effectiveness, however, has really been the same writ large. But the real question, and this is one that's not just asked by me, but by many others within the expert community, is whether defeating the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria is sufficient, or whether we're just setting ourselves up for another series of military engagements abroad.
Do you think that there is a way to actually defeat these terrorist organizations with a different strategy, or will it always be lingering to some extent? Will one evolve into another?
There has to be a way to defeat these groups because they weren't in existence in the strength and numbers that they are today, even a decade ago. And, you know, the questions that I ask myself are, why are these groups stronger today? What is bringing them together? And that gets to some of the conclusions that I've had, which is that, you know, we have defined them separately by groups and are fighting them group by group. This gets to the critique that we've heard many time over about the whack-a-mole strategy, that we're just going to keep fighting the same war in different places over and over. And also the idea that it really is the ideology, the beliefs that these groups hold, that is bringing them together and making them so dangerous. But simply countering the ideology, this idea that the Bush administration started with the war of ideas and that the Obama administration has pushed forward, is not going to win the contest. Because when you look at how these groups are getting support on the ground, and I'm talking about the foot soldiers that join al-Qaeda and that join the Islamic State, very few of them are joining for ideological reasons, but they're joining because the conditions that their communities live in and the idea that these groups are going to deliver short-term gains and benefits to their communities, that's the part of this that we need to counter, which is, of course, much broader than fighting these groups, but actually reversing some of the chaos and conflict that we've seen spread throughout the Muslim world.
So how much of an impact can diplomacy have on this, and how much of it gets muddled within everything else? Is there a feeling that groups like this only understand power? Is that a misdirection in and of itself?
It is a misdirection to some extent because we miscalculate the patience that some of these groups have. They see their fight as one that is lasting decades or some even centuries, and they talk about this line of fighters that goes back to the Prophet Muhammad, and their struggle is one that will continue. So they talk about a war of attrition or making us expend our resources to the point where we can't anymore. And that's where it comes back to diplomacy and the role that I've called for of really leading the fight and countering these groups where they're winning, frankly, on the ground against us. And that's, you know, they're out on the field in very dangerous situations and able to, respond quickly to local dynamics. And the United States and some of our partners simply, we don't have people out there because of the risks to our personnel. So starting to change that risk calculation and then beginning to put our diplomats in the field. And this is to start to engage with key local actors and local leaders in order to get a sense for both what these leaders need in terms of their own safety and security, and to bring together what is frankly going to have to be a large series of very complicated sub-state to state partnerships to really cohere against a movement that is, in all sense of the words, an enemy to almost all of the world today.
I know one key word for you is risk, and I wonder if you can measure for me where you think we are at in terms of our policies when it comes to dealing with terrorism, the risk level we're at now. And when you talk about risk in the future, what sort of risk are you talking about, and how much of that risk has to be a calculated risk, and how much of it is open-ended and a little bit scary because we're not exactly sure what's out there, of course?
The risk that I'm talking about is risk of failure, which the United States has become incredibly afraid of over the years. There's obvious reasons why politicians don't want to fail at that strategic level, but we're not even undertaking upstart projects for fear that we would fail and waste money in a time of austerity, frankly. And, you know, there's also the sense that, you know, if we try and fail, maybe we make things worse. The decision then to not try is a decision in and of itself of not taking action. And that paralysis has actually affected how the United States has been viewed abroad. It has made us much weaker in the eyes of some of our enemies. And they've simply exploited the idea that the United States will not act to their own benefit. And then the third category of risk is one that we've heard former ambassadors call for, but this is the risk to American personnel. Our military is out there, the warfighters are out there, and they take a lot of risk. But there is an entire other side to our government, a softer side, the diplomats, the humanitarians, those who are running our development programs. And we are not willing to put them in situations that are insecure. And it's handicapping the United States' ability to operate in countries where, frankly, the military knows it, the State Department knows it, people on the ground know it, but what is required is that soft approach, and we only have boots on the ground as the response.
Catherine Zimmerman is research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and the research manager for AEI's Critical Threats Project.